Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Double E's Talk Tech. My name is Mike Hoffman, and as always,
I'm Daniel Bogdanoff. And again, we have Matthew Warner, who is a metrologist here at Keysight. And I am going to make the same joke every time. How is the weather?
Well, surprisingly, it's quite warm today. I didn't think it would be, but sometimes we're wrong.
You're a terrible metrologist. Meteorologist? Anyway, it's really cold outside.
How have we not scared you away yet?
Yeah, I don't know.
How are you still here? Yeah, you're a trooper, man.
My boss lists me $100 bills.
You can tell Brig that you're pushing for, you know, trying to break his record here, because Brig's been a pretty prevalent guest host person when Mike's out of town. Anyway, today...
Moving on.
Yes. Today we're talking about the history of the Volt. So I've been doing some reading of a book set in the late 16, early 1700s. And normally I don't like historical fiction at all. I'm more of kind of a sci-fi guy. But it's been really interesting. It follows a couple people through who are members of the Royal Society in London, who, Newton was part of the Royal Society, and all these big groundbreaking, they call themselves natural philosophers, but they're basically scientists, just biologists, everything kind of combined into one. We're all part of this Royal Society that was funded to help develop science, and that's where we got, Newton came out of that, basically. And one of the really interesting stories I came across was how the Volt was discovered. So, we have Volta, who was, I think, Italian, and the Volt is obviously named after him. Do you know what the difference is in SI units? Some of them are lowercase and some of them are capitalized.
Ooh, no, I thought they were all capitalized.
They're not, so like seconds are not capitalized.
Yeah, touche.
Right, and meters are not capitalized.
So is it the ones named after someone?
That's exactly it. So if an SI unit is named after someone, it's capitalized, and if it's lowercase, then it was just defined. It wasn't actually an invention.
Like a kilogram or whatever?
Yeah. Right.
Kilogram is second. Is there another one that is lowercase?
Meters, seconds, candelas.
Oh, meters, yeah.
There are. Mole. Yeah, moles. So there are. You can start looking for that. It's pretty cool. The gram, I guess, kilogram. But then you have, ampere and volta and newton and all kinds of. So
joule.
If it's capital, joule, yeah, same. Pressures like
bull. Pascal.
Pascals?
Yeah. Pascals,
yeah. Capital. So there's this guy who was, electricity has actually kind of been known about for quite a long time. The Greeks knew they could rub amber.
Shock on themselves
something.
On doorknobs all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's all those doorknobs in ancient Greece. And they're like, well, that's just a thing we have to live with.
Probably the balloons, too.
Oh, we live with it a lot here.
Yeah, they would rub balloons on the carpet and hold it over their children's heads so that
it creates light. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure they could see, sparks in the dark and stuff, like
lightning.
When you get into flannel sheets, because they slept on flannel sheets and mattresses in ancient Greek times, right? Is that another word? I don't think that's another word. Anyway, so the Greeks at least knew about static electricity. So you could take amber and rub it on fabric or something, and it would actually collect dust, right? So, you've seen that paper statically clings to things. And so there's kind of been this understanding of the existence of electricity for a long time.
Well, isn't there evidence of battery piles or crude battery piles being found in, say, ancient Egypt?
I don't know.
Okay.
It wouldn't surprise me, because it's actually surprisingly easy to build a battery. You just have to get lucky enough to stack the right things on top of each other.
Isn't it just like a potato and a couple wires and you're good? Or?
Yeah, potatoes are actually batteries, so they've... No, that's not true.
Sorry, keep interrupting.
No, that's great. We're getting there. So the potato batteries actually comes from the same principle that caused voltage to be discovered. So early 1600s, science kind of wavered for a while between the Greeks and the early 1600s. There was a lot of research in biology and all that, but not so much in this movement of natural philosophy. So that's when Hooke discovered cells through a microscope, and they were performing all kinds of surgeries and autopsies on animals to learn more about what the organs did. And it's a crazy, crazy time to be alive, I think, and and to be a scientist. But in the mid-1600s or so, they invented a static electric generator. So enough to generate a charge, and then it would discharge. So kind of like a Van de Graaff generator, if you've seen those. They have the two balls, and they kind of zap between the two. And that was as far as anyone had ever gotten with electricity. So they've been able to create static electricity over time and just kind of zap things. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And then someone, I don't remember the name of it, it's called a Leyden jar. They is a capacitor. And we've heard Ben Franklin experimented with electricity, and he's the one who notoriously mislabeled the direction of electron flow, right? Okay. So that's the reason that, you know, the whole negative to positive terminals and convention and currents flowing one way, and
thanks, actually Ben.
The current vector points in the opposite direction. He was experimenting with Leyden jars, which were basically a capacitor. So it was just this crude capacitor that they could play with, and they could kind of charge them with static electric generators, and they had their ways. But once it discharged, it pretty much was done. So it still was not a constant voltage source. So anything that we have now runs on a constant voltage, or at least a constant supply of voltage. So you can move magnets or wires around magnets and get current and that type of thing, but it's still some sort of consistent supply. It's not just a buildup and a zap. So this guy named Galvani was working on doing some static electricity experiments, and he was skinning frog legs, which, you know, why wouldn't you, right?
As you do.
Yeah, so apparently frog legs were just a thing you had in
was
your
life. Was he French?
I think so.
Was he skinning him to like for science or to
no,
eat?
No, no, no. I don't think he was French.
Dinner.
We may have to edit that out. I don't know.
Is that offensive? Frog legs are delicious.
I do like.
I assume.
Yeah, frog legs. They're also good for science. So either he or his assistant, you know, assistants never really get the credit, right, for things. He was skinning a frog leg, and apparently frog skin has unique capabilities for static generation. So you'd like rub frog skin on things, and it would, I don't know, I have never rubbed frog skin on things before, to be perfectly honest.
Of course not.
That'll be the next podcast. We'll have frog legs and
show and tell.
So they're skinning frog legs in the lab, which, you know, like I said, is a thing, and they would hang the leg on a hook, and they'd take a scalpel, so they had a brass hook and a metal steel scalpel, and they're skinning the frog legs, and the scalpel touches the sciatic nerve of a frog leg. And nerves are pretty good conductors. So what happened is when the scalpel hit the nerve, which was also touching the brass hook, the leg kicked. And they're like, whoa, okay.
That must have been scary.
Yeah, there's no frog on this frog leg. It shouldn't be able to kick, right? So this was in like 1680 or so. They're like, okay, frog legs, something you can do with electricity is going to cause these frog legs to kick. So on went 20 years of research into electricity. And there was kind of this showdown between Galvani and Volta. Now, spoiler alert, we probably know who's going to win this showdown, right?
Well, I feel like Galvani, when I think of galvanized materials.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So there is this, so galvanic isolation, galvanically coated nails are like a zinc-covered nail. And brass, do you guys know what brass is? Is a combination of
copper and iron, is it?
And zinc.
Zinc, okay.
So essentially what happened, it's the same thing as like the potato battery or the lemon battery, is the frog's nerve was ionized, right? So if I take brass or zinc and I take steel and put them up against each other, there's not going to be any current flow or voltage. They're just going to be up against each other. But if you put them in some sort of ionized, you know, conductive charged solution, then that solution is actually going to force different characteristics out of the different metals. So the brass hook, the zinc, is going to respond differently to that solution than the steel. So it basically, this, you know, acidic solution pulls a proton off the metal, which gives an extra electron into this fluid, which, you know, the movement of electrons is
Current. Yep.
And so brass or zinc does this at one rate, and steel does it at a different rate. And since they're happening at a different rate, you have a potential difference between the two metals as a result of this
electron pull.
Yeah. So there's actually voltage and current, and that's what caused the frog leg to kick. And that's the same thing that works for like a lemon battery or a potato battery. Is it's not the same. You're not sticking copper in both ends. You're sticking, usually it's a galvanized nail or something in one end and copper in the other, and that creates a potential difference through the potato or the lemon. And that's how it works. It's really, really cool. So Galvani, the frog leg kicks, and Galvani's like, no, I'm pretty sure that there's this electrical fluid stored up in muscles and in, biological tissue. And when I touched the two, it let all the fluid out. Kind of like when something breaks the smoke. You let the magic smoke out. It let the magic electrical fluid out.
So the assumption was it would happen once.
It actually would be kind of an ongoing thing. So it wasn't necessarily a static charge. Somehow, the theory at the time is that it's kind of, I think what's happening is the frog leg is flexing, and it's staying flexed until it gets removed, or until the redox reaction is done. And so Galvani's like, no, it's definitely in the tissue. And Volta's thinking, no, I'm pretty sure that it's in the metal. It's a metal thing. It's not what was dubbed animal electricity. It's all the same. It's electricity.
Okay.
So they're doing 20 years of research trying to figure out what is causing this. And it actually led to Galvani's considered to be the father of bioelectromagnetics.
Okay.
So I'm going to, think about bioelectromagnetics.
It happened in, what year was this?
This is like the 1680s or
1680s,
so.
1680s, and then it went dormant for another 400 years.
It actually didn't. So they kept researching, bioelectromagnetics for pretty much as long as people have known about this, it's been researched. So our muscles move as a result of electrical impulses.
Oh, sure.
And our cells actually create electrolytes, the term electrolyte, like drink your Gatorade.
What plants crave?
it's what plants crave. Is actually, electrolyte is a salty ionized, in fluid. It's a solution that tunnels into your cells when your cells need it, and that charge difference is what enables the cells to expand or contract. Yeah,
ion channels. That's actually what mitochondria provide for your cell, too.
Yeah, so
voltage.
So, all this comes from Galvani skinning a frog leg. And you can actually, there's another independent voltage source that they found as a result of this, is if you damage tissue, so if you cut it with a scalpel or beat it up, whether it's alive or dead tissue, it actually creates a charge.
Okay.
So they invented, this is the coolest thing ever, frog leg batteries. So you could take like frog thighs and prep them with a scalpel, and that would damage the tissue enough that you'd get a potential difference, in this tissue. And then you could nest a bunch of them together and connect wires at the end, and you had a bio battery. And
this is like the premise of the Matrix, right?
I was gonna say it's the premise of American football.
That too, yeah. We're getting pumped up. Hit me.
So even after Volta discovered a constant voltage source, biobatteries, they played with them for a long time. So they made, the one I read about was oxen head batteries. So you could take a series of ox heads and chain them all together and make a battery out of it.
That's awesome.
It's just blows my mind.
It's like this, we should have prepped for this podcast and brought some oxen heads on.
No, I'll spare you all that. But I mean,
thank you.
My conclusion here is that electrical engineering is definitely not what it used to be.
What a time. It would have been a great, like you said earlier, what a time to be alive.
Yeah.
What'd you do today? Well.
So there's all these demonstrations throughout time for the Royal Society of like this electricity. So Volta is still, even after Volta discovered the volt, like I said, they're still experimenting with electricity. And Galvani's nephew, I'll digress a little more. This is so cool. He invented, or he kept on his uncle's experiments, and at one point used a voltaic stack, which Volta invented, to do a demonstration on a recently executed criminal. And he took electrodes and connected it to this recently executed criminal who, as legend has it, sat bolt upright and, like, moved around, even though he was clearly not, you know, able to do that on his own accord.
What a time to be a scientist, you know?
And legend has it, in the audience was a young girl named Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein later in life. So we actually get some of our, you know, modern horror canon from the discovery.
I'm not surprised.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm not surprised.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm just glad it's not a horror story about a bunch of oxen head chained together in a room somewhere.
So going back to...
There can be.
Yeah, so this whole bioelectromagnetics field of study was discovered as a result of this. In the meantime, Volta is working on proving that it's not about the muscle tissue. It's something to do with the metals. It's the same thing. It's not animal electricity. It's just electricity. So he discovered actually the same redox reaction that we were talking about that happened in the frog leg with the hook and the scalpel. He discovered you could stack metals together. So I think it was like iron and zinc or copper and zinc.
Copper and zinc, right?
Yeah, I think it's copper and zinc. And then you could also stack salty, wet cardboard in there. So you'd have zinc, wet, you know, salt-watered cardboard, and copper or iron, and you'd get a potential difference between the two. And then if you stack a bunch of those together, it becomes a series of voltages in parallel out of those ports, or out of the top and the bottom.
Your serial.
And this was the first constant source of voltage. It was dubbed the voltaic stack, and it was enough to get the volt named after Volta. So all of modern electricity that we use today is built on this constant DC voltage source. So, you know, the first light bulb was actually demonstrated and powered from a voltaic stack. They filled the basement of the Royal Society with voltaic stacks and had one little carbon filament light bulb up top and showed it off, and it was like, oh, that's cool. Too bad no one will ever use that because it's impractical to have an entire floor full of voltaic
like computers,
stacks.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. you know, it just the course of history was dramatically changed as a result of that scalpel touching the sciatic nerve. It's a really pretty cool story.
We wouldn't be here using all this electronics and talking to our lovely audience without it.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the podcast for today. I wanted to talk about that story a little bit.
Well, so what is the volt now?
That's a good question.
What's the volt in the future?
I think a volt is a volt. So let's you know, let's make the what is a volt now a separate bonus podcast here. I think okay. That'd be pretty cool because I wasn't sure how long that history lesson would be.
It's a pretty good amount of time.
It's so cool. I as I was discovering that, it just seemed too good to be true, right?
Like it would have been very interesting to be living in those times where, you know, it's like we're kind of in this what's the internet joke right now? We're kind of we were born too soon to explore the universe, but born too late to explore the world around us, but born just in time to browse dank memes.
Oh, what a time to be alive. Yeah. Yeah, it you know, reading through history a little bit makes me kind of sad to have not been alive and born into the right family at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because to be a natural philosopher, as they called it, they called it that because you have philosophy and you know, philosophy has been around for a long, long time. You know, how do we think and exist? Natural philosophy was more how does the world exist and operate?
Did you know that if you go on, I've tested this theory, by the way, if you go on Wikipedia, any Wikipedia page at all, pick one at random, and click the very first link within the body of the page, and do that a certain number of times, I think it's like at least within 10 clicks, you'll be on the page for philosophy.
Yeah, I think there's an XKCD on this, right? There's a couple of loops,
sure.
But in general, try it. Click the very first link that's not like an annotation or something, right?
Right. It's like the very first link that goes to another Wikipedia page.
Yeah, it's pretty glorious.
Yeah. Start with football and go to sports. Start with, you know, go to sport. It'll go to a competition. Go to competition. It'll go to, like, psychology. And then eventually get you to philosophy.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. You know, philosophy is really just, like, the rational thinking of the world.
Thing, yeah.
Which is really just what science and math is, too.
Yeah. It's cool. And back then, to be successful, like us, we go to school for a long time to learn about very specific fields. For them, they had to be kind of the content expert on and technical expert on everything. So kind of the Renaissance man of science.
There's also a lot less to know than, you know?
It's true. Yeah, it was more, yeah, you had to, like, you know, just take assumptions from other people and try and prove them wrong. So a lot of personal rivalries about theories. So, like, the Volta-Galvani rivalry was, you know, pretty strong. History tells us they didn't personally, like, have it out for each other, but they were pretty dramatic theories against each other.
There's a lot of these historical rivalries that I feel like have been dramatized a bit through time.
Yeah.
You think of Tesla versus Edison, right?
Sure.
Like they were, you know, arm wrestling each other every day and, you know, taking out ads in the newspaper, trash talking each other. It's like, eh, probably not.
Yeah.
Right? But everyone loves to think Thomas Edison was some sort of crazy man.
Right.
It's like, okay.
Well, they're both crazy men.
Probably, yeah, exactly. You got to be a little crazy to do great things like that.
Yeah. So. All right. So I didn't prep anyone for this. Any predictions?
Yeah, I have so many predictions.
When is this episode gonna air, you think?
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
So it airs today.
It airs today.
When you're watching this, it's today. It's
true. I'm trying to think if I can, you know, a prediction of like current events or something.
Well, honestly, I think for me, what I see out of this is, you know, the whole maker movement and like for electricians and electrical engineers, the ham radio movement of the 60s and 70s that's carried through today. So if you do ham radio, it's still a thing for sure. That whole making, designing, developing, experimenting, iterating is very ingrained to us as engineers. And I think we're going to see kind of a growth in that as computers are now more accessible and easy to use. Matthew has a funny one, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I have two predictions.
Okay.
So the first one's about this podcast.
Uh-oh.
So I predict that in the next, we'll give it a year, we will have a live battery demonstration, either from a potato or a frog leg or something like that. And at the end, Mike will eat it.
Oh, frog. Okay.
Yeah. And then my second prediction is for our fans. And I think one of our fans is going to write that ox head chained together horror story just for Mike.
Okay.
Oh, that would be great. Some fan fiction for the podcast?
I do not endorse or... Yeah, we don't endorse that happening, but we do want to know about it if it happens.
I think we can officially say our podcast has made it if we start getting fan fiction.
Yeah.
Like, you know, writing stories about me waking up to a dozen oxen head in my bed or something. It's like some sort of Scarface redux with engineering.
To be fair, it doesn't have to be about Mike. It could be about someone else. That's fine.
Yeah, leave me out of it. I just want to
okay.
Read it.
We're out of time. Thank you for tuning in. We will see you next week. Make sure, in 2 weeks rather, make sure you subscribe to the Keysight Oscilloscopes podcast and to the Double E's Talk Tech podcast on your favorite podcast engine. I'm Daniel Bogdanoff. We had Mike Hoffman and Matthew Warner. We'll see you next time.
Cheers. How come I don't get a prediction, by the way?
Oh, do you have a prediction?
Not anymore.
Jeez. What's your prediction?
My prediction is that you're going to skip my prediction. It already happened. It's a self-fulfilling prediction.
I'm sorry. You didn't seem to have one. So
no, I really didn't. I was going to make a prediction related to a solar flare knocking out all of our technology, and then ox farming being like, the next big thing. that's the currency of the future.
But don't you know it's about the metal? Did you both tell us that?
No, we got to start from scratch. So we got to start all over if we lose everything.